ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम् वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरोः श्रीयुतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातां सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धु दीनबन्धुर्जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरि वृषभानुसुते देवि प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे एवरीवन हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा इज इट ऑडिबल इनफ राइट एट द बैक यू आर एबल टू हियर इट्स क्लियर सो we welcome all the participants. It's heart overwhelming that over here in the city of Nasik, the holy land of Nasik, we have so many of you who have shown such keen interest to know about this subject matter, the journey of self-discovery. In fact, I have entitled this particular six session course as a journey, because journeys are very interesting. Journeys, they teach us some very pertinent and important lessons, and we find a goal when we are on a journey. We see that we are progressing as we are on a journey. We see that we have a destination to reach when we are on a journey. Now, definitely, you all might have taken so many journeys in your life, but this will be a little different. In fact, I would want to happen that this should be one of the most important journeys in the lives of all of you. As the title says, it's the journey of self-discovery. I guess there is one Discovery Channel, which is very famous. And what is being shown on that channel? About animals, animal life. Am I right? Well, as human beings, we have to go beyond the animals and the animal kingdom and try to not discover just the animals, but more than the animals, discover this social animal. the human being. And therefore, let's consider that coming 6 days, beginning from today, would be the self-discovery channel in our life. You all want to go and pursue this journey? You agree? Okay. You know, whenever I encounter this kind of an atmosphere, when, you know, there is a kind of a teaching thing which is about to begin, I always remember, you know, my mathematics teacher, Mrs. Margaret, her name was. And we were in the 8th standard, and once she had asked one question to all of us. Of the two personalities, who is superior in one's life? One's mother or one's teacher? And, you know, as sincere students, we were trying to answer this question very sincerely. Of course, most of us, we said the teacher, for one reason, because she was asking the question. So if we would answer something else, you know, we were worried about our grades and all the other factors. But of course, there were some courageous students who said, no, it's the mother. The mother is the first teacher. And so many different reasons they gave. What do you think? Mother, of course. Everyone? But the mathematics teacher which we had, she had an interesting answer. She said the teacher is more important. And the reason she gave, that a mother can put to sleep how many of her children at a time? But a boring teacher can put to sleep maybe a big crowd of this size. So definitely, in the coming 6 days, I don't want to become that teacher who would be superior to your mothers. So hopefully we'll have at least a wakeful session, if not anything else. So when we are talking about journey, which we are about to undertake, now I was in so many countries as it was spoken just before. And many of these countries, we had the map in order to locate the places where we were supposed to go, because a foreign country, a foreign land, we strangers out there. So map is something which plays key role when one is undertaking a journey. So then, if we are undertaking this journey, let's see what is the map which is in front of us. What are the topics which we'll be covering, which will be like, you know, a map in front of you, which by which you'll come to know that where you are heading towards. So if you have taken a journey from Nasik to, say, Calcutta or Kolkata, then you know which are the stations you're supposed to come on the way. And as you see, yes, these stations are coming, which means you're on the right train and you're heading towards the right destination. Am I right? Well, that's another story. You're in the Indian Railways. What time you reach, that's your best luck. But then, of course, looking into the map and what's happening in the journey, you come to know you're on the right way, the right track. So over here, the 6 days, the topics which we'll be discovering for ourselves would ensure that where we are heading towards. So today, day one, is it visible for all of you? So day one, today we'll be discussing search for happiness. A very interesting topic which would form the premise, the foundation for all the discussions which we'll be having for the next 5 days after today. Then tomorrow we shall be discussing another important topic, a very burning hot question, especially nowadays in the scientific world. Does God really exist? We are sitting in a temple of God and this person looks like a God's man, the Hare Krishna movement and all of that. Well, my first question is, wait a minute before you go ahead, does he exist? I'm saying that this question might come to you. So then, of course, we may say yes, but how much weightage do we carry in that yes? How much do we really, really believe if somebody pulls out a gun at our temples? Not this temple, temples. And then asks us, now, do you believe in God? What proof do you have? Do we have that determination and, of course, that clarification which we might give? So, we'll be discussing how to scientifically understand the existence of God. That will be tomorrow. Then the day after that, day three, okay, after establishing the existence of God, the next question is, why then there are so many, especially India? Why not just one? So is there one God or many? After that, day four would be another interesting day of our journey. Wherein, is there life after death? This is another interesting question which many of us we might have had. I'm not talking about the Hindi Bollywood movies wherein they show a lot about, you know, so many punarjanams and sat janam and saw janam, we are together and the romance continues. Not all of that, but of course we'll be discussing more seriously into this particular, trying to get the answer to this particular question. Is there life after death? Is it a fact or just a fiction? And in that we'll be discussing the science of reincarnation. Then another very, very important question. This is one of my favorites. So I have kept it towards the end so that I make sure that all of you are still with me. Why do bad things happen to good people? Good question. Or let us take the other way around. Why good things are happening to so many bad people I know? What about them? And of course, this question we ask for ourselves. I'm such a good man. Why bad things are happening to a person like me who is such an upright, uprighteous person? So that would be day five. And the last day, as we reach the destination, we'll be discussing the practical application of Bhagavad Gita. Is this book really practical? Is this for me? As I am a corporate professional person, a housewife, educated student, whatever, is Bhagavad Gita really meant for me? Can I live Bhagavad Gita or is it just meant to keep on the shelf? Or just when somebody passes away, then you read the second chapter or whatever. Or some Bhagavad Gita contest, you know, the children, they have to memorize so for them. So either Bhagavad Gita sometimes becomes for the children to recite and participate in some shloka contest, or else it becomes for the oldies when nothing else to do. You can't even watch the TV program properly. Okay, let's read the Gita then. No, it's definitely practical for all of us sitting over here and everyone on this planet Earth. So how is it practical? We'll be discussing day six, the last. So let's begin with what do we have in store for today? Day one, search for happiness. Now if I ask you a very simple question, all of you sitting over here, all of us, are we all searching for happiness? You all are searching for some kind of happiness, more or less, whatever kind. We all are searching for happiness. Now when we encounter a question like this, that all of us, we are searching for happiness, let's try to decipher this using some logic. If you use some logic, when we are all searching for happiness, when you are searching for something, it means you do not have it right now. Does that logic sound reasonable? Say, for example, I'm looking for something. I'm searching for my, say, wristwatch. Imagine I've lost my wristwatch. Imagine. And I'm searching for that. So which means I do not have it, therefore I'm searching for it. So using that logic, if this question or if this phrase is put in front of us that we are all searching for happiness, which means right now we might not have, sirs. Well, you might ask this question, wait a minute, how can you say that I do not have any happiness? I do have some happiness, you know, when I listen to my favorite music, when I watch my favorite actor or actress on the screen, when I eat my favorite food, when I visit my favorite place, when I put on my favorite dress. We have so many favorites. So we do definitely experience some amount of happiness in all those encounters which we undertake. Am I right? So then, how do we draw the conclusion that, how do we understand we are all searching for happiness? We do have some happiness. Which means, we are searching for happiness. We do have some happiness. We want some more. We are searching for more and more and more. What was that? Ye dil mange more. Am I right? So we are searching for some more happiness. We are not satisfied with just whatever we have. One time there was a king, and this king, he was quite successful in his kingship, in his kingdom. And one day a sage visited this king. So the king, you know, generally when sages, they visit any place, so the kings, you know, or anyone else, you know, they definitely want to know what's the future in store for them. So the king wanted to know, what is the future in store for me? He asked the sage. And the king really wanted whether he'll be happy in his future. So of course the sage went on explaining, you know, what is in store for him in the future. But then the king said, okay, you know, you sages, you are wise people. You have that wisdom in you. So explain to me in one word, what is the definition of happiness? One word. If you are really eloquent, just in one word, precisely tell me, what is the definition of happiness? And the king was waiting for the answer. And the sage said, he thought for a while, and the sage said, happiness is like a butterfly. And the sage left. Now the king was pondering upon it. Happiness is like a butterfly. How do I understand the definition of happiness by understanding, say, a butterfly? He couldn't figure out. Many weeks passed, months passed. Now the king was sitting in his royal gardens, and he happened to see a butterfly. And he remembered the sage a couple of months ago had told this. Happiness is like a butterfly. So let me examine. Go and see. So he went closer to the butterfly. And as the nature of the butterfly kept on flying. Now the king became a little desperate that how come the butterfly is not getting examined itself. So the king went on behind the butterfly, and the butterfly kept on flying. The king kept on running. The butterfly kept on flying. The king kept on running. And now the king became so desperate, he pulled out his sword. How dare this butterfly not stop? And many hours had passed. The king was desperate now. But he couldn't catch. He was sweating, he was puffing, panting, totally exasperated. He sat down in desperation. And that was the time when the butterfly alighted on his shoulder. And he got his answer. Did you? He got the answer that happiness is like this butterfly. When you chase, it appears to be just within your reach. It's just within your reach. Yes, if I work a little more, I can get that model car for me. If I work a little more, a little overtime, I can get that model cell phone for myself. I can buy this, buy that particular house by the sea, if in case there is a sea here. So many desires and aspirations which we have to make us happy, and we feel always it is being portrayed for us because of the media and all the other stuff, that it's just right in front of you, and you endeavor a little bit and you'll have it, you can grab it. But it's like the butterfly, it's so close but yet you can't catch that. So happiness many times is like that. We chase for it, it keeps flying ahead of us. And sometimes when we do not chase, it alights on our shoulders. Unexpectedly. Now, when we are talking about happiness, which has this kind of nature within this material world. So how do we deal? How do we get the real happiness? Which is not like that butterfly which keeps on flying. But which is something substantial, which stays eternally, permanently, and which can give us real satisfaction. So for that, what we have to do is, we have to first of all understand that we are in this human form of life. And this human form of life has got some very, very interesting features. And since all of us sitting over here are human beings, am I right? Since all of us we are human beings, then what is that happiness which we have to seek on the platform as being human beings on this planet Earth, within this ecology? That's what we have to ask to ourselves. So for that, first of all, we have to know what is the importance of our own form. What is there within this human form which we all are having, which makes it so special? Do you all think that we human beings are superior to the animals? We are superior to the animals. Therefore, we watch the Discovery Channel. Have you find the animals coming and, you know, attending the self-discovery channel here? So definitely we claim ourselves to be superior to the animals. But over here, I have something interesting for all of you, my dear friends. Because over here we'll be seeing that there will be some things which are common between we humans and all the animals out there. And these are some very, very prominent things which we all engage in practically every day. And let's try to explore and find out whether these things do really make us common as animals and human beings, or whether we are still superior. Now, this is a verse from Hita Upadesh, the scripture, wherein it says, Ahara Nidra Bhaya Maithunam Cha Samanya Etad Pashubhi Naranam. Ahar Nidra Bhaya Maithunam Cha. So we have the first, eating, sleeping. We have defense and then mating. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Ahar Nidra Bhaya Maithunam Cha Samanya Etad. Samanya means common between the animals as well as we human beings. You all agree? As you see the images here, the animals eat and we eat. The animals sleep, we sleep. The animals defend themselves, we also have our defense systems. You know, they have their families, they reproduce, they have sex life, and the humans do. Now, if these four things are common, and you all have agreed upon this now, So what makes us superior? The animals can say, well, you said that this is something which is common, so what makes you superior? What makes us superior? Okay, let's go one by one. I heard some sounds here. The way of living. And can you elaborate? What kind? What is that way of living? We have to cook it. We have to have so many other arrangements. And before cooking, we need to buy it. And we need to have money for that. We need to work. We need to get educated. More complex. So animals, they don't have to go to college for that eating. They don't have to work 9 to 5. Still it's 9 to 5 nowadays. Or they don't have to slog hard and cook and all these things, So in one sense, they are more relaxed in their eating. They eat more healthy. You see, if you go into some of the real dense forests, they have all organic. Nowadays, you'll find, human beings into organic eating. So, yes, I agree to you that our eating is more sophisticated. You mean to say, just like, this image, over here you have some people sitting, on a dining table with, like posh arrangements. You go in a five-star hotel with fork, spoon, knife and like that, you might eat like that. And the animals, they might just, in a very barbaric way, do that thing. So, in that sense, the activity remains the same. We become a little sophisticated in that particular act. You had something? Let's go one by one. Only man can define between right and wrong. Discrimination power, viveka buddhi. You all agree? We can discriminate that this is right. We are supposed to discriminate. This is right and this is wrong. And after discrimination, do the right. That's also we are supposed to do. Yes, we have the power within us to discriminate. I'll tell you, the Food Corporation of India, they did a test. They took a rotten bread, which was rotting for a week with all the fungus and everything on it. And they cooked it as, bread pakoda. They cooked it. And half of that, they put in front of a dog. And half of that, they served it out to a human being. Guess what happened? The dog came, sniffed it, went away. The human being came without even sniffing. Sara andar. Supposed to have discrimination. So, I agree to your point, that we are supposed to have that viveka buddhi, the proper discrimination within us. Seldom we find human beings using that proper discrimination. Well, I would rather say that we have the higher power of discrimination. The animals do discriminate also. It's not that, just like this example of the dog, which I said. Take the example of the dog again. You go in front of the dog and you just keep bending down, trying to lift a stone. What do you think? The dog will come closer to you? He comes to know that he's trying to hit me. And so many other factors we can come to know that, yes, they do have discrimination power to a great extent. Dogs, in fact, they have such discrimination powers that they can sniff around, catch a criminal. They can discriminate between body odors. In the police department, they have the dog squad. Wherein these sniffer dogs are so sharp that there is a crime which has taken place at some place and this dog can smell the body odor of the criminal and can catch that criminal miles away. Do you think a police commissioner of that city can do that? If you ask the police commissioner, come on, you are the police commissioner, a dog in your department can do something which you can't do. And imagine the police commissioner is on his fours, you know, sniffing around then trying to do what the dog is doing. Does that mean we should make the dog the police commissioner? Well, they have their own roles to play. So yes, we have these 2 points which we heard. Anything from some other side? Okay, let's take from the fair sex. Yeah. It's
found out that gravity is the force which pulls you down. Dog doesn't find that. You know that difference.
Okay. So madam is saying that we have the thinking power. We can think.
For the future.
Newton thought when the apple fell.
That there is some gravitational. There is something which, you know, which Earth has. And
yeah. They are more interested in the apple, not why the apple fell. Now, yes, you are very much right that we can think ahead, we can plan ahead. Of course, we can't say that the animals do not have at all. I always remember, you know, my childhood, sometimes I would watch these donkeys. Have you observed donkeys? Sometimes, you know, they stand for hours staring. Sometimes I thought that quite thoughtful animal. You know, appeared like a kind of a philosopher, you know. Maybe just cooking up some philosophy. Animals, you know, they do have feelings. In fact, you know, dolphins, this particular species, it has been observed that they have such feelings for their, not just for their fellow dolphins, but, oh sorry, I forgot. You are supposed to use your cell phones. But when it's on the quiet mode. So I request all those who are carrying their cell phones, you can kindly quieten them. So, you know, these dolphins, I was talking about dolphins. That dolphins, there have been cases where dolphins have helped human beings when human beings have been trapped in some ocean. And these same human beings, they are killing and gobbling so many of the dolphins practically every day. So again, we are talking about, yes, thought process. Yes, we can think that when the apple falls, why? But let's try to go ahead. Why did the apple come at the first place on the tree? Who made it fall? Is that not another interesting question? Who made it fall? Okay, we'll discuss that tomorrow. So yes, this is another interesting point that we have that thinking ability within us. We are supposed to use it also. Yes, we had, yes, someone, yeah. We can smile, we can laugh. But then when you are in front of the photographer, why he has to say, smile please? You know, they have to say, please smile, you know, cheese, you know, that's what they, all these things. Yes, you are right, we have the ability that we can smile and, you know, we can laugh and we can make others smile, we can make others laugh. But how many humans are doing that? As against making humans smile and laugh, what's happening? We human beings have become so expert in making others cry and lament. Huh? So we are supposed to, yes, we are supposed to have and use that ability. Let's take the last one. Wow. Okay. What should I do? Okay, you say.
Only human are curious about the origin of life or the meaning of their life.
Okay, here we have the last say. The humans, they can know the origin of life. They can explore into that particular question. Who am I? Where did I come from? Who is God? Which the animals cannot. So when we are talking about the importance of the human form of life in regards to eating, sleeping, defending and mating, we have to understand, first of all, according to the Vedic scriptures, we human beings are only 4 lakh in our categories. I'm not talking about the numbers, but the categories. As against the animals, which are 80 lakhs. So you must have heard about the 84 lakh number. Chaurasi lakh yonia, like that, you know. So all the other animals and plants and vegetation, reptiles, they comprise of 80 lakhs and we, 4 lakhs. So, we who are 4 lakh in number, definitely, we are in less minority. But, you see, something which is valuable is not also very easily available. Just like if you want to buy real diamonds, would you go to the sabji market? Definitely, real diamonds and real gold is very rarely available because it's very valuable. So, human form of life, which is very valuable for this reason, not just for the eating, sleeping, mating and defending, because all these things, the animals, more or less, the animals, they do it quite well. Let's take eating. An elephant can eat 100 kgs in a day. Anyone? Over here. So as far as eating is concerned, you know, some of the animals have superseded us. Sleeping. How much can we sleep? Yes, of course, when a seminar like this begins, you know, good place, you know, nice, all the fans are on, and nice lullaby, you know, lori, you know, the speech becomes like that. So there are some animals like the polar bear can sleep 6 months at a stretch. Can anyone? Defense. Let's take defense. We, with all of our high-tech defense systems, we can't even protect our own bodies when a mosquito bites. Anopheles. That female one, when it bites, malaria, it can kill this huge mammoth-sized body of a human being. How big is the mosquito? And which gun this mosquito is carrying? Which missile this mosquito is having? So how much can we defend with all of our defense mechanisms? Just like that animal which you see up above. Can anyone dare to confront that animal? Bear? Just without any weapons, looks quite dangerous. So as far as defense is concerned, definitely they also have very sophisticated systems of their defense. Mating. How much can a human being reproduce? You know, I was reading one article in which it said that the rat species, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Rat, in 1 year, they can multiply till 15,000 in number. You know, their children, their grandchildren, great-grand, and the descendants like that. So, a male and a female rat can in 1 year reproduce up till 15,000 in number. Anyone? So which means, even if you take these 4 activities, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, the animals are well equipped than us, physically. So which means, when we are talking about, as gentlemen rightly said, that we have this one prerogative, which the animals do not have. Just like all of us, we are over here discussing something beyond just these four activities. So therefore, when we are talking about the importance of the human form of life, we have to understand that a human being has not just intelligence, but higher intelligence. Because the animals do have intelligence also. We have higher discrimination power, can inquire into the cause of suffering and the destination of life, which the animals cannot. This is the speciality which all of us, which we are carrying inherently within us, which the animals do not. And therefore, when we do not explore this potential within us, looks good? If one does not explore this potential, then one is simply a polished, sophisticated, two-legged animal. Yes, we have become very sophisticated in our eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But the activity remains the same. Like when Alexander was in India, he was in the central part of India and he had set up his army, his base camp. And there was this one incident which took place that in that village around, the surrounding neighborhood village, there was a thief, just an ordinary thief. And he saw that in the middle of the forest, there is this huge camp set up. So thinking he would get something to steal, he wanted to look for something. So he located the biggest tent in that camp. And he wanted to steal something in the middle of the night. But he didn't realize the biggest tent within that camp belonged to Alexander the Great. So he was caught red-handed. It was brought in front of the king, the emperor. And the king became so angry on this thief that he immediately pronounced, behead him, sentenced to death. Now, you know, as the tradition is there everywhere, that before he was supposed to be beheaded, the last wish was being asked. So when he was asked, what is your last wish? He said, I want to have an audience with your king again. So he was taken. So he asked Alexander, why are you punishing me like that? What is the reason? What crime did I do? I want to know. And Alexander said, after all that, you still do not know? What did you do? You were caught red-handed stealing in my tent, the Alexander the Great. And the thief said, my dear king, can you tell me what is the definition of stealing? And the king said, stealing. Stealing means to take someone else's property without that person's consent. And the thief said, what are you doing, my dear king? I entered your tent in the middle of the night to take away some of your property without your permission, and you said that's the definition of stealing. My dear king, what are you doing? You enter into nations. Not middle of the night, but middle of the day. And I don't think you take permission from that king of that nation. Can I steal your kingdom? So my dear king, what I am doing on a small scale, you are doing in a large scale. What I am doing in a very primitive way, you do in a very sophisticated way. So what is the difference? I am a small scale thief and you are a big time. I am a small time thief and you are a big time thief. Therefore you are Alexander the great thief. Which means you should be beheaded 100 times more severely than me. So now, what do we understand? That yes, we might be also engaged in eating, sleeping, mating and defending. I don't eat like animals, I don't sleep like them, I don't do all those other activities like them. I have my sophisticated way of doing. But then it just makes us into this. Until we explore further. So what is that which we have to explore further? We see that sometimes, forget about we exploring something further, man becomes worse than an animal. Who is smiling here? You see, I don't know, somehow I got that image. Looks like who looks more dangerous? Huh? Looks like the animal looks more dangerous. Sorry, the human. Like in Harvard University, there is one ecologist. His name is Mr. E.O. Wilson. And he has studied ecology for more than 3 decades, 30 years. And he wrote one article after studying ecology of our planet. He said that if you wipe out every single human being from the surface of this planet Earth, which means not even a single human being is present on the surface of this planet Earth, he's asking the question, what would happen to the ecology? And he answers by saying, Earth would benefit immensely. You know, the endangered species would be revived back, the global warming would be repaired, the rainforest which has been degenerated would be regenerated if all the human beings are wiped off from the surface of this planet Earth. And then he says, as against the human beings, if any other species is wiped off, there will be a heavy ecological imbalance. Which means, according to this person, who is a Harvard professor, this Mr. E.O. Wilson, so according to him, planet Earth doesn't need us ecologically. We are harming planet Earth more than any other species. So in that sense, we have to realize that simply materialistic advancement of our human civilization is not making us a progressive species. We have to look into something more which will make us really progressive. And for that, we have to understand that what is in store within us, don't worry, I'll explain about this, that what is in store within us and how to explore it and how to use it for the right purpose. Just like a farmer who wins a lottery. And the farmer, he wins a Mercedes Benz. And the farmer thinks, wow, looks like a good vehicle for tilling my land, plowing my land. So he uses the Mercedes Benz to plow his field, agricultural field. Do you think it's wise to do that? What would happen if a farmer who uses Mercedes Benz to till his field? He can't till the field properly. The first thing which would happen is this. The second is, the Mercedes Benz would be bent all the places. So instead of, you know, calling it Mercedes Benz, you would call Mercedes bent. And he, the farmer, would be frustrated totally. So which means that Mercedes Benz has a certain purpose. Let's take another example. Say, you know, a high-tech computer, a laptop, and even in the computer technology, the most high-tech, like we have here the Macintosh, Apple, MacBook. So if you have the most sophisticated laptop and you use it only to type a letter every day, it has, you know, hundreds of features. But if it is used simply to type a letter every day, it's underuse of a sophisticated machine like that. So similarly, this machine, which is so sophisticated that we can explore into regions beyond this universe, and we are simply using this machine for eating, sleeping, mating and defending. It is like using this sophisticated machine just to type a letter every day. You might as well use a typewriter. Or Kohinoor diamond. Let's take this example. You have a Kohinoor diamond and you are using that Kohinoor diamond as a paperweight on your office desk. It will do that job. You know, it will act as a paperweight, but Kohinoor diamond uses a paperweight. Or, you know, the dog is barking in the middle of the night in front of your house, you know, you use a Kohinoor diamond to throw at the dog. Yeah, you can get rid of the dog, get rid of the diamond also. So, similarly, the point which we are trying to understand over here is that we have such sophisticated systems within us as a human being, the higher intelligence, discrimination, power and all of that, thinking power, communication skills and all of that, which is supposed to be used for a certain purpose. So therefore, we have to understand that as this exploring tendency, we explore more within the human beings. The first question which we should be asking in order to find happiness, remember the topic is search for happiness. So in order to search for the real happiness, we have to first of all detect what are the real problems which we have to eradicate to come to the platform of real happiness. So what is a real problem which only we human beings can ask this question? If you take a parrot and put the parrot in a cage, the parrot doesn't have the facility to ask the question, why did you put me in the cage? Do that to a human being. Someone walking on the street, put him behind bars. What would be the first question? Why? Because we have the ability to question for the right thing. So now, let's take this. In order to have this question, what is a real problem? What do you think? What is the real problem? Now, if you know, if you ask a child who has lost his toy, beta, real problem kya hai? Toy. I lost my toy. Where is my car? So, you know, if in the UN summit he's asked, you know, interviewed that, what do you think that the earth is facing the real problem? My toy is lost somewhere on this earth. That's the real problem. If you ask a housewife, what is the real problem? Maid hasn't come today. Bartan kaun manjega? Kapda kaun dhoega? That is the real problem. And if you ask anyone else, if you ask a student, what is the real problem? I have been going to the college for the past 2 years. No girlfriend yet. Or vice versa. Or if you ask any corporate being, what is the real problem? My real problem is my boss. You know, in the UK, United Kingdom, 70% of the corporate employees, they dream, you know, a constant dream, which 70% of the employees there they have is killing their boss. That's the statistics. But then we are talking about what is the real problem. So before we go into what's the real problem, let's try to define it. What are the criterions on which premise can we say that yes, this is or could be a real problem? The first criterion is that a real problem should be a real problem when it is common to all. Now, for example, how many of you, till this point of time in your life, you had any legal problem? Or let's ask, okay, only one. Let's ask, which means all others, you never had a legal problem. Really? I feel sorry for the lawyers. Okay, so all of you who had never had a legal problem in your life, for you, the profession of a lawyer, whether he exists on this planet Earth or he doesn't exist, it doesn't matter. Am I right? Which means, if you take legal problem, it's not a real problem because it is not common for everyone. So which means a real problem has to be a common problem for everyone. The next criterion, a real problem could be and should be a real problem and nobody wants it. Well, you might ask, how come there are some problems if there are problems, which people want it. Yes, there will be something which will be a problem for someone, and there will be something which will be someone else's problem would be a solution to someone else, and someone else's solution would be a problem. Just like a person who is totally depressed and confused, frustrated from his home life, from his office life, and he goes and smokes a cigarette. And he feels, wow, I'm feeling high in spirits. So he feels it's a solution for him. But the person who is sitting next, he's holding, you know, he's the passive smoker, and all the smoke and all that is going in his system. So it's a problem for that one. So therefore, a real problem has to be a real problem when this criterion is fulfilled. Nobody wants it. And thirdly, nobody can avoid it. Then only it can be a real problem. Say, for example, if there is a legal problem, definitely you can avoid it, especially in India. And you can avoid it not over the table, under the table. You know, there was one person, he was so much used to always having his hand under the table. You know for what? So, you know, one time someone walked in with a package, you know, with a package of money, and his hand, as usual, spontaneously went under the table. And the person said, "Sir, this is your salary." "Oh, salary." Then he... So, if there is any kind of that problem, yes, you know, Mera Bharat Mahan, we can solve it through so many means. But if we are talking about a real problem, nobody should be able to avoid it. And that becomes a real problem. So these three criterions, when met, can make a problem a real problem. So now let's see what we are talking about when we talk about the real problems. The first, which the Bhagavad Gita talks about. In fact, there are four problems which initially Bhagavad Gita talks about. The first is birth. Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadhi. Birth, old age, disease, and death. So these are the four problems which Krishna speaks about in the Bhagavad Gita. Birth, old age, disease, and death. Now, it meets with all the three criterions which you are talking about. Let's take, now many times, you know, when this particular slide is shown, one question crops up. Wait a minute, old age is okay, disease is okay, death of course. Birth, how come birth is a problem? I celebrate my birthday. You all celebrate? So how come birth is a problem? How do you say birth is a problem? It's the day of celebration. It's the moment of celebration. Now, let's try to analyze the process of birth and the whole phenomena of birth. Now, before any child takes birth, the child has to be in the womb like this. We all were in the womb of our mothers in this position. You all agree? This is a real image. Is it a very comfortable position? Just like, you know, you all are sitting very comfortably on your chairs here, but sometimes, you know, it becomes too much. It's been now 1 hour and more, and you know, sometimes you have to change your sitting postures, and the legs are paining, or the mind is paining, the stomach is, you know, hungry. Don't worry, we have some nice dinner arranged for all of you, just to give you hopes that. So now, you know, birth. So imagine if I ask you for the next 6 days, you have to listen to this seminar in this posture. And you know, according to yoga, this is a posture, it's called Balasana. And also there is another asana called Garbhasana. So imagine if you are asked to listen to this lecture in this position. Is it a very comfortable position? Now, we were all in this position for how long? For a minute? For an hour? For a month? For how long? For 9 months. And we were crammed up within a small bag within the womb of our mothers surrounded by all the substances of the body, you know, mucus, bile, stool, urine, germs, organisms, insects, viruses biting upon the tender skin of that embryo within. And you know how we were fed the food? We can't see this, but there is the umbilical cord. You know, what do you call that? Nadi. There is the umbilical cord through which whatever the mother eats, that gets, you know, blended and goes in through the umbilical cord. Imagine if today's dinner we feed like that to you. For a change, you know, let's have dinner like that, you know, through the umbilical cord. You know, rice, dal, sabji, chapati, you know, thrusted through that. You know. But we had our food like that for 9 months. Now this is a big room, you know, with some good facilities. You know, we have the projector and the screen and fans and all of that. If I ask you that, is it a good room? If I ask you, you know, that would you like to stay in this room for 24 hours without coming out? Wait a minute. Now, that's difficult. Now it's becoming difficult just after 1 hour or to speak 24 hours. So, imagine if I ask you, can you be locked up in this room for more than a week? No, never. Would you mind getting locked up in this room for a month or for 9 months? You can't even think about that. Imagine. Unimaginable. But we all were not in a big room like this, which had, you know, all these facilities, but in the womb. There were no televisions inside, no air conditioning. So which means, and then when the child comes out, does the child come out with, you know, a 32 close-up smile? Here I am. Celebrate. He cries bitterly. And the mother, what about the mother? Was it, what is it called? Labor pain. Am I right? Is it called labor pleasure? The mother has to cry. The child has to cry. Of course, the others are celebrating. So if, sorry, now, from next year when you have your birthdays, you can remember this talk. That, you know, it was a painful, excruciating experience which you all went through. So in that sense, imagine if somebody asks you, would you like to undergo the same experience in your next life? It's scary. It's jarring. So when we are talking about birth, in that sense, birth is a misery. It's common to all, since we all have taken birth. And if we do not rectify, nobody can avoid it. And nobody, in fact, understanding the fact, nobody would want it. Then, let's take the next one. Old age. Can we take questions at the end? So, old age. When we are talking about old age, definitely nobody wants to grow old. But we all have to. Whether whatever cosmetic arrangements we do, you know, we apply, you know, I was on plane from Belgium to London, and there was one magazine, Shop on Board. You know, you can shop on board. So I was just thumbing it through, and there was all these cosmetics, very costly cosmetics, and there was a lotion. It said anti-aging cream. That you apply this cream and you will not age. You will not grow old. As if, you know, anti, or there was one soap in Bombay they were advertising. Age control soap. I don't know whose age. The manufacturers or the people who are using. The age control soap. So whatever cosmetic arrangement we do for this body of ours, this bag of bones, it's growing to grow old. And Shankaracharya, in one of his compositions, he says, Angam galitam palitam mundam dashana vihinam jatam tundam vridho yati grihitva dandam tadapina munchati asha pindam. He says, what is old age? Old age is a time when Angam Galitam, this nice glowing skin, tight skin, in old age starts hanging loose. Galitam, galne lagti hai. Then he says, Dashanavihinam Jatam Tundam. The nice 32 close-up smile which I do, sometimes when I am asked to smile, all of that starts, the wicket girne lagte hai dhire dhire. Old age means starts coming out. Then all the beautiful nice hair which I used to groom it, apply so many creams and lotions and shampoos, old age, everything, you know, mundam, you know, without paying anything, you know, naturally the shaving takes place. Material nature shaves, you know. So, you know, therefore we decided we'll voluntarily shave. Because one day involuntarily it has to come out. So then that takes place. And then Briddho Yati Grihitva Dandam, then we have to handle, we have to use the third leg, dand, in old age. But then Shankaracharya very interestingly says, Tadapina Munchati Asha Pindam. All of this is happening to the body. The skin is melting away, the hairs are flying away, the teeth are falling away. All of this is happening. But in spite of all of this, my desires, they are not growing old. My desire to enjoy this world is becoming younger and younger and more youthful. Like in Bombay, there was one billboard, very interesting. And they showed a couple, old, real old couple, you know, face was complete with wrinkles. And it was a high resolution image and they were holding each other. And it was some kind of mutual fund scheme. But the caption was interesting. The caption said, whatever your age might be, your desire should be wrinkle free. So, tadapina munchati ashapindam. That's the scenario, that in spite of all that. So, old age is something which definitely nobody wants old age. People, they want to become more youthful. That one time, there was an old man and he was attacked by a lion. So, the old man, you know, he couldn't run, he couldn't save himself. So, he started praying to the lion. See, I am old. My blood is cold. Why don't you attack, you know, a warm-blooded youth? So, you will also enjoy, you know, real hot blood. So, the lion was looking at the old man. And the old man in desperation. I am old. My blood is cold. And the lion said, I am in a mood to have a cold drink today. So yes, you know, we may say that I have all the scientific devices, you know, for my old age. And but sometimes old age is more scary than death, because you have all the desires but no facilities. The desires are all fresh, but the body has become decrepit, defunct. And we are not able to use the senses the way we used to when we were in our youthhood. And then of course, when we are talking about disease, sometimes that goes on all through our life. Diseases. What is the meaning of disease? Dis-ease, when the ease is no more there with us. So that's called disease. And of course, there is no end to how many diseases which we have to face. One person went to a doctor, and visiting the doctor called up and told to this patient, hey, you paid me by that check. The check bounced. The patient said, your disease also bounced back. So yes, we may go to any doctor to cure our diseases, but can any doctor give us an anti-death pill? Take this anti-death pill, you won't die. Of course, we'll come to death now. But, you know, can a doctor give, say, a simple headache, say, a medicine, giving that? Never ever you'll have headache. So disease is again common to all. Nobody can avoid it. And it's something which nobody wants it. Death, of course. That is another, the last leg of the miseries, which the gross miseries which Krishna is talking about in the Gita. And, you know, there is a saying which says, as sure as death. Something which is as sure as death. Which means, if the certainty of something has to be established, it says it is as sure as death. Then, this is not simply these four things. There are other three which our scriptures talk about. Miseries caused by one's own body and mind. This is called adhyatmika klesh. Now here in adhyatmika doesn't mean the spiritual. But here in it means one's own body and mind. Miseries caused by one's own body and mind. Miseries caused by natural calamities like tsunami, floods, famine and all these things. So miseries caused by natural disturbances. And thirdly, miseries caused by other living entities. It could be a silly mosquito. That also comes in the category of adibhautika klesh. So adhyatmika klesh, adidaivika klesh and adibhautika klesh. Herein, you see, when we are talking about miseries caused by one's own body and mind, this body which we have, if you look into the potentiality of this body can give us more misery than pleasure. The potentiality of this body to give us misery is far more than the potentiality of this body to give us pleasure. Like for example, how many different limbs of our body do they give us real pleasure? Like that's the five senses, the eyes, the nose, the tongue, the skin, the ears. These are the five senses which give us some real pleasure. But, and that's not all the time. But when it comes to misery, if you take the entire body of ours, you know, like right now, are you feeling blissful because of the liver inside? Do you sometimes go in ecstasy? My kidney is giving me so much pleasure today. My gallbladder. Do you know there is a gallbladder inside? We do not even know. Where is it? Somewhere. Now let's take our big toe. The big toe. How many times do you really swoon in ecstasy? My toe. What pleasure my toe is giving me today, you know. I am in ecstasy looking at my toe. How much pleasure, how much potentiality this big toe has to give us pleasure? Do you find that, you know, movie songs are filled with, you know, hero and heroine glorifying your lotus toe is really fascinating me like anything. Your lotus toe is like the full moon. And the nail on the lotus toe is like the effulgence of that moon. And the dirt within the nail is like the pockmarks on moon. Do you find, you know, poets glorifying, you know, or in songs and all that, the toe has been glorified so much. So when we are talking about this big toe, how much pleasure this big toe can give? But how much potentiality this toe, big toe has to give us pain? Bumps into a rock. Nail comes out. Blood. Wound. Infection. Then toe. Paining. Whether you are sitting, whether you are standing, whether you are sleeping. Toe. 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 The whole consciousness shrinks down to that toe. Which means, if you just take this one limb of our body, it has got immense potentiality to give us pain as against pleasure. So therefore, we have to understand that this body is not just designed to just extract, generate some pleasure on the bodily sensual platform. It is meant to go beyond it. And of course, natural disturbances, which is not in our hands, so many things happen. And the question comes, why? Why do these natural calamities take place? Stay with us. We'll be discussing that. Day 5. Why do bad things happen to good people and other living entities? Yes. Especially, we are more troubled by our fellow human beings. Not any other species troubles us so much than we, our own human beings. So then, these are the other three miseries which are, you know, considered or comes in the category of the real problems. Then, the question is, what are we doing? Is our material advancement giving the solution to the real problems of life? Our real material advancement, we should talk about the scientific progress. Is it really giving us some solution? Well, if we look into that, modern technological advancement only gives rise to two things. Temporary relief with no permanent solution. Like, for example, you know, we have fast transportation. We can go to some place now so fast, you know, the jet speed. We are on a jet speed. But you know, when the accident takes place, that's also at that speed. So previously, people used to transport using bullock carts or horse cart or like that. But imagine, you know, two bullock carts head-on collision. At the most, what would happen? Now we have airplanes, so we can fly at that speed. And then, you know, sometimes what the airplane drops, you know, some bombs, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, what happened to that? You know, a bird might fly, at the most what the bird would drop, you know. But sometimes people are having nothing on the plane, the plane might go into a building or might be taken into a building and so many people die. So the question is this really the solution to the real problems which we are discussing tonight? So therefore, when we talk about science, we see that man has progressed, as you see over here. As Darwin said that from ape and the super ape, and then we, you know, evolved into a human being that we can, you know, be so sophisticated in our technology. So the progress of the mankind, which we read about and talk about so much. But the progress is, it's speed without direction. So imagine a train, which is at this speed, the bullet train, but there is no direction, or if it's going into a valley. The speed is quite good, but the destination is a deep valley. What is the use of that speed then? Or else, you know, herein we have the technological revolution which people talk about. This is the statistics. 2005, you know, 3 years ago, the Harvard study, motorists using cell phones have caused 2,600 deaths, 330,000 injuries and 1.5 million instances of property damage because of using of some technology. You might ask, why are you using this technology? We'll come to that also. So efficiency is doing things right. And effectiveness is doing the right things. So many times we are not able to discern. We simply want to become efficient, but not effective in the real sense. So therefore, yes, we are in the jet's age, wherein everything has a jet speed. And we have these great technological instruments which is taking us into the next century. The Apollo, the Mariner, the Viking and all this. But then, what do we find? Sounds familiar? Looks familiar? That with all that technology now, because the heads have not been cleaned, the hearts have not been cleaned. So it is the age in which we are living that we have guided missiles in the hands of misguided people. The missiles are guided, but the people who are using, in whose hands, those people are misguided. So therefore, this is what then which we experience. Now, here was the famous, what do you call this? The Titanic. You know what was being propagated, prophesized for this? A ship that even God could not sink. The supposedly unsinkable Titanic. Yes, now people have made movies out of it and it has received awards. But the sorry state of affairs, the truth remains very brutal. That this particular ship, which was boasted as that unsinkable ship, it got sunk on the very first maiden voyage. So which means, are we really heading towards what the goal of the human form of life is supposed to be? So this is the question. Are we really advancing in the right direction? Because we see that in spite of our so-called technological advancement, this is what is being experienced. Rape, suicide, murder, violence, divorce, mental stress, unemployment, drug addiction. Yes, it goes on and on and on the list. The more we are into the scientific world and thinking that we are progressive, we are also progressive or becoming progressed or whatever, digressed in these features. So, happiness, when we are talking about happiness, happiness is not simply accumulating. People think that happiness is when I have more achievements. If I achieve a degree, if I achieve a job, if I achieve a house or whatever. But happiness comes in fulfillment. Right now, I would like to show you a small movie. You have the sound cord connected? I'll just show you a 5-minute movie. It's a cartoon. It might sound a little hilarious, but it gives out a very, very pertinent message that when human beings go into the greed aspect, so what happens to a person who is simply greedy about, you know, the things of this material world? Now, you know, the example first is given that imagine a student who is appearing for his exam. A student who is appearing for his exam, what is required to pass an exam for that student? He should study hard. Anything else required to pass that exam? Dedication and concentration. Anything else? The minimum marks required. Okay. Anything else? Pen. You all agree pen is required? No, let's take this. You all agree pen is required? Now imagine a student who thinks that is the only thing which I require to pass my exam. Pen. So what he does, all through the year, he accumulates pen. You know, different types of costly pen, and he keeps accumulating pen after pen after pen. And then on the day of exam, in the examination hall, he enters with a bag full of pens. Do you think he will pass? Just because he has the most costly of all pens? So similarly, when a human being thinks that if I have more and more things, you know, in my possession, I will become happy. It is analogous to say that a student thinks that I'll secure good grades if I have the best quality pens. Yes, pen is required to write the exam, but more than that, what is there here has to be reproduced through that pen. That is what is required. Is it connected? So this is what we just discussed, this example, it's about that you'll come to know. And then we'll discuss further. Can we switch off the lights? You can have the lights on. So this particular small little movie, wherein of course you understood that he was trying to accumulate those nuts, and he went nuts. And in our life also, when we are trying to search for happiness, we are trying to search for happiness in things of this world. Just like that animal, that squirrel, was trying to look for happiness in just those nuts. So similarly, we go nuts trying to look for happiness in just things of this world, not trying to go beyond. And therefore, the the philosophy of one's life, the modern day man, is should make us think, as the paradoxes which we'll be taking up. This is a nice composition done by one 14-year-old student. The paradoxes of life, how life it makes you think, ponder upon. So the paradoxes are, we have shorter buildings but shorter tempers. We have bigger houses but smaller families. You know, sometimes tall buildings and short tempers, it's a nice combination. Because tall buildings help commit suicide. So people who have short tempers, if they want to commit suicide, it's better they are on a tall building. So taller buildings and shorter tempers, bigger houses and smaller families, we have more conveniences but less time, more degrees, less sense. Like, you know, there was one logician, you know, logicians, you know, who always see things according to a logical perspective. So there was one logician, and this logician always used to analyze things according to his logical brain. So one time he visited a village of India, and there he saw a scene in front of him. He saw that there was a pole and there was a bull who was tied to the pole, and the bull was going round and round. And there was a farmer who was working in the field. And the logician now tried to apply his logic, that what can he make out of it. So he went up to the farmer and asked that, what's happening? Why the bull is tied to the pole and it's going around? Like in villages, you know, you find this particular thing happening. So the farmer said, you look like a very sophisticated, educated person. You can't make out what's happening. The bull is going around the pole and is grinding the grains for me. As I'm working in the field, the bull is doing the grinding job for me. So the logician asked, you are in the fields and the bull is here going around. How do you know that the bull is going around? You are not seeing. How do you know that the bull is doing the job for you? So the farmer said, see, I have tied a bell around its neck. And when I am working, I hear the ringing of the bell, I know that the bull is doing its job. The logician, this is what the problem with you uneducated people. What if the bull stands at one place and does like this? The farmer said, the bull is not a logician like you. If I would have tied you to the pole with the bell, you would have done like that. So sometimes, you know, we have more degrees but less sense. You know, when US, the NASA, when NASA, they launched the moon expedition. Before that, they were thinking that, you know, moon is like zero gravity over there. So if we want to make some notes of, you know, what we are examining out there, so we need a pen. But pen means the ink has to flow down. If there is no gravity, how will the ink flow down? So they worked hard for 12 years and spent $12 billion to create anti-gravity pen. And you know what the Russians did? Used a pencil. So sometimes, you know, when we're talking about more degrees and more experts, common sense is sometimes very uncommon. Then more knowledge, less judgment. More experts, less solutions. Sometimes more experts and more problems. Like too many cooks spoil the broth, as they say. Wider roads but narrower viewpoints. We are living in an age where more medicines but less wellness. We are living in an age where in multiplied possessions we have, but we have reduced our values and ethics. We have conquered the outer space, but what about the inner space within us? We have higher incomes, lower morals. Fast food, slow digestion. Fancier homes, broken families. Like, you know, coming from the West, you know, over there, it's an offense if you ask anyone about their families. Because, you know, in America, it was said that some 3-4 years ago, 71% of the marriages would land up in divorce within 3 years of the marriage. But you know, now the divorce rate has gone down in America. Nobody marries. So you have to be married before, because they simply live. It's called the live-in relationship. They simply live, you know, and then they have 4 or 5 babies, and then they decide, we should marry now. Yeah, I was, you know, because initially I didn't know, but dealing with the Westerners, you're not supposed to ask, who is your parents? Or where are your parents? You know, hardly the children, you know, like there was a cartoon. And in this cartoon, it showed that there was a husband and the wife. And there were some kids playing. So the cartoon said, the husband is telling to the wife, my dear honey, just see, there they address their sweethearts like honey. So what a wonderful sight is this. My children and your children are playing with our children. So this is, you know, one lady, this was one actress, Hollywood actress. She married and divorced more than 14 times. And she, you know, the 12th time, she realized that she might as well marry the husband which she had divorced the second time. And she had gone to the court for the marriage and for the divorce so many times that the court people were fed up. Every other month she would come either for the marriage or for the divorce and, you know, the certificate. So they decided, when she came for the 14th time, they decided, you sit. We'll give you a permanent certificate. And it said, to whomsoever it may concern. So that is the situation. We, you know, the homes are very fancier homes, but what about the families inside? Nuclear families, you know, subatomic families, and it's going even more lesser than that. So then we say that we talk too much, love too seldom, but then we hate too often. We have learned how to make a living, but not life. We have added years to life, not life to years. We have been all the way to the moon and back, but have trouble crossing the street to meet the new neighbor. We spend more, but have less. We buy more, but enjoy it less. And therefore, the paradoxes of life, it says that it is a time when there is much in the show window and nothing in the stock room. Life, it makes you think. Now herein, of course, these are some very, very famous things when it comes to the consumeristic society. Shop till you drop. Which means people think that if I simply have more and more things around me, then more and more things will make me really happy. So the consumeristic philosophy or the mad consumeristic philosophy. This is something which might relate to us. It says, I work in a job which I hate. Now, honestly, do we really say on a Monday morning, today is Monday, like on a Monday morning, do you really get up with the feeling, wow, another beautiful day to go to office? And do you really anticipate and, you know, await that, my boss, I was waiting for the weekend, you know, where is my boss, the beautiful face of my boss? Or some of the students, you know, do you really long for that Monday morning, you know, my professor, the sweet voice of my professor, I'll be enjoying this Monday. So it begins, the consumeristic philosophy. I work in a job which I hate to spend the money which I do not have, which means credit card, to buy stuff that I do not need, and ultimately to impress people whom I anyways do not like or love. Does that make sense? Which means, whom are we living for then? If this is what my life is in these few lines, then am I really living the life of a human being? Am I really searching for that real happiness? So therefore, materialistic equation, it is something very interesting. What do you have? The materialistic equation. People are used whereas objects are loved. You have people, human beings, which are supposed to be loved. We are supposed to love each other. So human beings are simply used like a doormat or any other machine, whereas objects are loved. A recent case in Bombay where a teenager killed his father because he stopped the usage of his cell phone. So that's what we are heading up to then in that case. Now, this is a line of reasoning which a materialistic, consumeristic person says. Let's try to examine. I can imagine it, therefore I want it. I want it, therefore I should have it. Because I should have it, I need it. Because I need it, I deserve it. Because I deserve it, I will do anything necessary to get it. So which means now the situation has become the dog-eat-dog world, the rat race of this consumeristic society. Everyone thinks the more I possess, the more I achieve, accomplish on material platform, that's what is my real success or happiness. And then of course, are we really becoming happy? Or as it here says, are we really so hungry for happiness that sometimes we see these kind of situations happening? Looks really hungry. I guess most of you also. But don't worry, we don't have a keyboard for you. We have something else. And yes, sometimes it becomes like this, that we become so frustrated, we might want to just give away with things which we think might give us happiness. Hence, we come to the conclusion that simply accumulating things and enjoying the senses on a sensual platform is not the source of our happiness. Herein, we have a very beautiful example from one of our Puranas, Garuda Purana. And there is a shloka, a verse from Garuda Purana, which explains that how there are some five animals when they go to enjoy their five senses. You know, we have the five senses, eyes, nose, tongue, ears and skin. So how when these five animals go to enjoy each of their sense, what happens to them? And then let's see what this verse speaks more. So here are the five animals. This verse says, Patanga, matanga, kuranga, bhringa, meena, hata, pancha, bhireva, pancha, ekam pramathi sakatham nahanyate yasevate pancha bhireva pancha. So there are these five animals mentioned. The first is moth. patanga. Have you seen a moth? In the rainy season, it just hovers around a street light or whatever. So a moth is very much infatuated by its eyes. So a moth wants to enjoy the nice sense of sight. And sometimes it is observed that if you light a candle, the moth will first circumambulate that flame of the candle, the dancing flames of candle. To such an extent, it gets infatuated that it enters into that flame. Gets killed. So this moth gets killed when it goes to enjoy the sense of sight. The next example is deer. A deer is a very swift animal. This deer can run so fast, even a hunter can't shoot. Because in order to shoot, the hunter has to spot the deer. But the hunter knows what is the weakness of this deer. What the hunter does is, it plays nice flute. So when it plays nice flute, the deer is very much attracted to the sense of music, the sense of sound. So the deer stops to listen to that. And that is the time when the hunter shoots the arrow, kills the deer. So the deer gets killed when it goes to enjoy the sense of hearing. Fish, meenah. Fish has everything for its survival within the body of water in which it lives. But the fisherman knows. What is the weakness of the fish? The sense of taste. So the fisherman throws the bait, you know, something hooked to the hook, and the fish goes, that something new has come for my taste buds. So the fish goes to enjoy that, gets hooked up, gets killed. So the fish gets killed when it goes to enjoy the sense of taste. Elephant, a huge animal, a mammoth-sized animal. But this huge animal, you know, the mahout, that 5-foot human being knows how to catch it. Because the elephant is very much attracted by the sense of touch. So what he does is, he makes an effigy of, say, a female or a male elephant, whatever he wants to catch, the opposite. And then digs a pit, covers it with grass and puts that effigy. And when this elephant looks from a distance, oh, my beloved is standing there, so goes to touch. Infatuated by the sense of touch, the elephant gets caught. That's the fourth example. And the last example is that of bumblebee. Have you seen bumblebee? Not the honeybee, the big one, bhavra. So this bumblebee, it has got so much potency in it that it can drill a hole through a tree trunk. It has got such sharp, you know, fangs or whatever you might call it. It can drill a hole through a tree trunk. But the same bumblebee, when it goes to enjoy the nice fragrance of a lotus flower, and when the lotus flower closes in the evening, this bumblebee which can drill a hole through a tree trunk, definitely can drill a hole through a lotus petal. But it doesn't. Because it will lose the enjoyment of smelling the lotus flower. So in the morning when the lotus flower is opening, the bumblebee is found dead. So the bumblebee gets killed when it goes to enjoy the sense of smell. So these are the five senses which are talked about as against the five animals who get killed. Patanga, matanga, kuranga, bhringa, meena, hata, pancha, bhireva, pancha. These five animals get killed when they go to enjoy ekam, one of their sense. You see, the bumblebee got killed only because of the nose, not because of the eyes. The fish got killed only because of the tongue, not because of the ears. But then it is said, sa katham nahanyate yah sevate pancha bhireva pancha. Why will that species not get destroyed who goes to enjoy all the five senses simultaneously? And which is that species? We, the glorious human beings. These animals, they go to enjoy just one of their sense and they get destroyed. Why not the human beings who wants to enjoy all the five senses simultaneously? And where is that one instance we can find? Like a man goes to watch a movie. So when a man goes to watch a movie over there, he wants to enjoy all the five senses. The eyes want to see beautiful forms. Hopefully. Nowadays, people like to see horrific forms also. So beautiful for the gratification of the eyes. He wants some beautiful forms on the screen. So the eyes are gratified. And while all that is going on, the sound there should be nice stereophonic Dolby effect sound for the ears. So simultaneously along with the eyes, the ears are getting gratified. Then there is a nice cushioned seat in the theaters wherein you can recline back. That's for the skin. And because so many people are sitting in the theater, and definitely we don't have transcendental bodies, it smells. So they keep spraying room fresheners for the nose within the theaters. So simultaneously the nose is getting gratified with that fragrance. And while all of this is going on, he keeps munching. Sa katham na hanyate yah sevate pancha bhireva pancha. Why will this human being not get destroyed when it goes to enjoy all the five senses simultaneously? So therefore, sense gratification is not the source for the happiness, especially when it comes to the human beings. So what happens is, we are searching for the right thing, but at the wrong place. You know, a place where people go and read books, what it's called? Vidyalay. A place where people go and eat, it's called Bhojanalay. So if somebody goes to Bhojanalay and says, do you have the encyclopedia? So he will say, I have the menu card. If you want to read something, you can read the menu. So if you want to read something, you have to go to a Vachanalay or a Vidyalay. If you want to eat, you have to go to a Bhojanalay. So which means, where the bhojan is available, that's called bhojan alay. Alay means a place where something is available. Now this material world, you know what Krishna talks about this material world? Dukhalay. So if in a bhojanalay you get only things to eat, in a vachanalay you get only things to read, in dukhalay what will you get? So what are we searching for then? We are searching for the right thing, but at the wrong place. Just like somebody goes to Bhojanalay, he is gone, looking for the right thing, maybe getting some knowledge, but at the wrong place. So that's something which we should get a realization of. And therefore, the goal of human form of life should begin with to inquire about a permanent solution to the real problems of life. Who is the root cause of all causes? Who is the source of everything? If we really want real happiness, which is not like the butterfly, which doesn't fly away, which stays with us, it has to begin with understanding this goal of the human being. And therefore, when we are talking about pursuing a meaningful life, we are talking about proper inquiry. Proper inquiry means athato brahma jigyasa. That the inquiry should not be, what will I eat? Where will I sleep? How will I enjoy my body? And all these, you know, bodily sensual activities, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. But the real inquiry of the human being should be, who am I? Who is God? What is the source of everything? Why am I suffering? Why do bad things happen to good people? Is there life after this life? These are the relevant inquiries from where the human life begins. And therefore, we have to understand that tomorrow, what we'll be discussing will be, you're talking about the source of everything, the root cause of all causes. But my question is, I don't even believe that that root cause of everything exists at all at the first place. So, what we discuss today definitely is the answer which we will be getting in installments as you come every day. I didn't give you the full answer because otherwise I would be alone tomorrow. So the real search for happiness will culminate when we go through the journey completely. So then the next step to find that real happiness within this human form of life is to understand the source of everything. And that source of everything, first of all, whether that source exists, we'll be discussing tomorrow. So definitely today session was a little exhaustive, as some of you might have felt. But we can take just a couple of questions if anyone has real burning questions, life or death questions, if in case people have, we can take that. Anyone has any questions? You had something? Yeah. No, you are right that, of course, you know, we all get this human form of life, which we talked so much about, the importance of the human form of life, and that's because we all took birth. That you are very much right. I agree to this, that in that sense, the phenomena of taking birth has that importance associated with it. But we are talking about the whole experience. We are talking about the whole experience, and it is the scriptures which talk about this whole experience which the embryo has to undergo. Now, it doesn't mean that if you have not experienced a certain posture, you can say, if you have not experienced a certain posture, which means then that is something which is you are only meant for. Just like, you know, an animal, a hog, a pig, he enjoys eating stool. But when somebody who is in a higher consciousness, he comes to know that that's miserable life. A human being. So herein, we are not talking about that one remains in that childish mentality to think that, yes, whatever is there for me is the real happiness right now for me. As a human being, as I said, we have the facility to go beyond just some whatever bare minimum things which we get for our survival, just like the child within the womb. So, if you take the physical aspect of the experience which a child has to undergo is very traumatic. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains that the embryo in the womb is praying to God that please relieve me from this condition and I'll never ever forget you. So the embryo is praying to God when the embryo is within the womb. Now, when we are talking about the experience, the traumatic experience that the child has to undergo, I'm just talking about on the physical level. So the miseries which Krishna talks about, and it's not me, it's the Bhagavad Gita talks about. Krishna says, Janma, Mrityu, Jara and Vyadhi. So he's talking about just on the physical level, on the skin level. So that is what is not recommended, that we undergo that again. Yes, of course, what we are born as a human being with all the other facilities of understanding God, yes, then it is glorified. The human birth is glorified for that. Durlabho manusho janma. That manusha janma is glorified. So you are right in that sense. But when we are discussing, we are just limiting our discussion to the physical experience which the child has to undergo. And that is painful. And that is what is a real painful experience which everyone who has taken birth or will take birth will have to undergo. So therefore, we just in today's discussion will limit the aspect of birth only to the physical experience which the child has to undergo. We don't go beyond that. And yes, you are right. If we go beyond that, taking birth is very glorious. For what reason? Not for again eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Then it was not worth it to undergo all that experience and to get this human form of life. It's again like using the computer for typing a letter. it's meant, it is glorious only when it is used for that real purpose, the goal of human form of life. Okay, so thank you all very much. I am a little sorry for a little delay. Just the, today's day was a little, session was a little longer. So from tomorrow, we'll try to catch up on time, and I know all of you are really hungry. And don't worry, we don't have keyboards and machines for you, but we have some nice, delicious prasadam waiting right out there. And tomorrow onwards, we will try to have some 5-minute, 10-minute kirtan at the end. You know, because sometimes the discussions become too heavy. You know, the terms and things, you know, too philosophical. So just to lighten the mood, we'll have some kirtan from tomorrow onwards. Today is already a little late. So thank you all very much for your kind participation and cooperation. And the journey has just begun, for your kind information. And we'll continue on tomorrow at the same time at this place. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.